This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the Worldwide Wave.
Hi, it's Worldwide Wave time, Joy's international news and current affairs show for and by the LGBTI community. We love taking you around the globe, one queer story at a time. I'm Matt, and I'm joined in the Victorian Pride Centre tonight by Alex.
Good evening. It's International Women's Day, time to celebrate the driven women in our community and also a chance to agitate for change. This year's theme is Changing Climates, Equality Today for a Sustainable Tomorrow, a theme that recognises the contribution of women and girls around the world who are working to change the climate of gender equality and build a sustainable future.
Here on Worldwide Wave, we have been privileged to speak with some powerful change-making women over the years. And tonight we celebrate them and inspire you. You'll hear from New York Times best-selling author and essayist Lauren Ho, who has gone through more trauma than any single person should, but has come out stronger on the other side.
And Samoan Fafafina trailblazer Amau Liaotalu, who works to advocate LGBTIQ rights across the Pacific.
And New Zealand Olympian and world champion rower Emma Twigg, who is mentoring LGBTIQ sports people. Here's a taste of what's coming up tonight.
Someone torched my car. I was getting death threats for a while. And then my car went boom in the middle of the night. And instead of anyone, the local police or the Air Force, trying to figure out what happened, who did it, you know, was I even safe there? They started investigating me. And it didn't matter what happened from that point on. Once I was identified as a problem queer on base who might not make the Air Force look good, my career was over.
We would love you to be part of the show tonight. Now, we do recognise that it's two blokes presenting on International Women's Day.
Yes.
Unfortunately, Shannon couldn't be with us tonight, so best wishes, Shannon. What we would like to hear from you, though, is who are the women that inspire you in your life? They might be somebody close to you, might be a friend, might be a business mentor, it might be somebody on the international stage. We're certainly going to give you a dose of inspiration tonight from our guests.
And Lauren Ho grew up in an infamous American cult called the Children of God. After being indoctrinated into what they called the family, it wasn't until Lauren left the cult that she realized that she could have her own life on her terms. Her life has taken her to the underbelly of America, where she experienced homelessness, drugs, solitary confinement, and dating women. She lived through America's infamous Don't Ask, Don't Tell rule in the Air Force, which ended her career in the military after she got threats and a car bomb destroying her car in incidents that she was then investigated for. But this experience did give her the chance to step away and think about who she really was. As the victim who became the hunted, we asked Lauren how this experience and this trauma affected her.
I think it shattered my worldview. A lot of what happened in the military shattered my worldview. And none of it's that abnormal. A lot of women who join are sexually assaulted. So I was sexually assaulted in the Air Force, and then my car getting torched in the investigation. It's, you know, if we go back to the title of the book, I had come to believe that, or I had, you know, deluded myself into believing that America would be the safe place, that once I got out of the cult, once I was free, my life would be different, and my problems would be left behind in the cult. And, you know, they weren't. They kept compounding. I became a lot less trustful, I think, of just the world in general. And in some ways, maybe that was good. I'd bought into patriotism. I'd bought into, you know, American exceptionalism. I bought into all of it, trying to be normal and trying to be like everyone else and blend in. Because at least this was an identity I could have. It was easy. I didn't have to pick out my clothes. I put on a uniform every morning. And I was wearing the right thing. Talk military speak, you're speaking the right language. And I could do that. It was easy to fake. And I hadn't really thought about any of it. I was able to just, you know, go to work every day and not make any choices about my life.
Is that for once you felt you belonged to something?
Yeah, I didn't. I knew I was different, but I could skate by. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take very long in the Air Force to see how don't ask, not tell will affect you. There are investigations in every, you know, from basic training on, there were rumors about people, and people were kicked out all around me. It happened. I saw it happen. But it was easy. It was easy to fit in still and hide and speak the language. And I didn't have to figure out who I was.
And would you, so now the military has evolved a little bit, hopefully, would you join now, knowing what happened to you at the time? Would you give it another go?
God, no, absolutely not. I used to think about that for a long time when they started talking about lifting down Ask, Don't Tell, and I was still young and dumb enough where I might have wanted to join and broke enough. Give psychology a second try. But no, I look at children now serving in the military, and they are children, and I'm not going to salute a child and be told what to do. No. Absolutely not.
And I think that, I mean, in your book, you talk about your spending your childhood in the cult. How does that affect your sexual identity?
It's hard to say how it may not have affected me, because that's the only childhood I know. But I think it did. I was talking to my sister about this yesterday, that she's still a Christian and able to hold on to religion, and it gives her a lot of comfort in her life. But it also, you know, still affects her with the shame and everything that can come from religion. And I was able to quickly leave religion because I was never taught that God loved me. You know, God loved everyone, kind of except me, because I knew there was something wrong with me, that I was gay. I was set apart for it at a very early age. And I think in some ways it made it easier afterwards. Not many queer people I know have these, you know, candy canes on the tree and their cool bicycle they wanted for Christmas stories of their childhood. We just don't have them. Or if we do, they're always tinged with some sort of horrifying trauma that we tend to laugh about, and we can laugh about to each other. But that's the thing. If I tell stories of my childhood to another queer person, they're like, you know what? I could beat that. And they can. They absolutely can. You can't be too precious about your trauma when you work at a gay bar, listening to other kids' stories.
I've seen a video of you where you talked about code switching, and I'm just quite interested to hear a little bit more about that, and what do you mean by code switching, and how does that affect you?
I mean, I think we all do it. I mean, queer people definitely do it. When I'm talking to another gay person, our mannerisms will be a little bit more gay. Where shoulders relax. We can be comfortable in who we are for a moment. It's the beauty of gay bars and kind of the tragedy of why we're losing all of them. And we do it. But yeah, when we're around our family, when we're around a cop, when we're around anyone, we will mimic their mannerisms and kind of put a little bit, we add a few layers to who we are to bury it. And we do it to get along. We do it to make people more comfortable around us. it's a natural phenomenon. I think the talk I gave is really the only people who don't have to do it are straight white guys.
And Lauren, you've had many experiences through life. If you were able to say something to your younger self about what to do in the future, or about, you know, what would you say to yourself now that you've gone through all this?
I might have warned myself about a couple people, but a couple decisions there. But I don't know. I think if I have a regret, it's that I wasted, I think, so much time trying to be normal and trying to fit in. And I was just in the wrong room. Call it a midlife crisis if you want. But I had about 5 years ago, I sold my house and moved into Winnebago and just drove around until I figured out where I needed to be and how to be a writer. And wrote furiously and got published. But I think we waste a whole lot of time trying to fit in. And, you know, those stories you tell about your life, if you can't be you without people being a jerk to you, can you swear on Australian radio?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck yes. Oh, it's been really hard to talk. But, if you can't be it yourself without people being assholes to you about it, you're around the wrong people. And it took me so long to learn that. I'm not very bright, I guess, but it took a minute. And now, yeah, I can be fully myself and I can be exactly who I am. And if you don't like it, you're not my audience, which is fine.
Famed US author Lauren Ho, one of our female trailblazers we are celebrating as a part of International Women's Day tonight on Joy 94.9. I love the simplicity that she is able to put there. You know, she was wasting time trying to fit in, but she was just in the wrong room. In other words, there's people out there who will absolutely love you, adore you, embrace you, but they might be in the room next door, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and the way she's so candid about, you know, sometimes you just got to, you know, just got to push your own, not worry so much about following certain behavioural
norms and
protocols,
yeah.
A little bit like we see with Grace Tame here in Australia, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, she wasn't being courteous or polite, but you know,
she didn't angry. Smile, but she was authentic in her action. Yeah.
Again, those questions about whether that's a judgment, a prejudice we impose on women rather than on men.
Well, coming up, we've got lots more on our International Women's Day special. We are a little bit closer to home with the leading women of the Pacific. This is Worldwide Wave.
Joy, out loud, proud.
Hi, my name is Hope Matumbo from the Multicultural Health and Support Service, and you're listening to the Worldwide Wave.
Who are the women that inspire you in your life? They might be someone close to home, like your mum or auntie, or it might be somebody on the world stage. Now, you mentioned a couple there before, Alex, Grace Tame and Brittany Higgins, who, you know, certainly in the last 12 months, we probably didn't know their names 2 years ago, and now everybody knows who they are and what they stand for. Jacinta Ardern, I've just got to throw her into that mix as well. I think she's just every time I see her speak, and maybe we're only getting little bits here in Australia compared to New Zealand, but she just has a compassion that is not present in other parts of politics that I see.
Yeah, pose and compassion, you know, it's just that ability to touch in and, in a way, to identify with the community she's speaking to or the issues she's speaking about, yeah.
And I'm going to throw in one other one to inspire people's thoughts. One close to us here, Jude Munro, who was the chair of the Victorian Pride Centre, who really did a tremendous job to provide this amazing, you know, with a team of people to guide them on the whole journey to create this amazing facility, which is going to be here for decades to come for the whole community. So that is some legacy, and she did a great job. So
yes,
another inspiring woman. Now it is International Women's Day, and the journey to embracing her identity as a Fafafine began for Amau Liotolu in Sydney, where they first came out as a young gay man and realised that there weren't any brown drag queens or gay men. Upon returning to her hometown of Auckland in her 20s, Amau discovered a much more culturally diverse queer community while coming to terms with her gender identity as a woman. It was here that Amau also strengthened her cultural identity as a Pacific Islander. Amau is now a fierce advocate for acceptance and rights of the rainbow community across the Pacific. Amau started by explaining for us the term Fafafine.
Fafafine is, it's a layered term, so I identify in a Western term as trans, but Fafafine doesn't adequate to a trans individual or trans female. So it's a layered term because we don't have LGBTIQ as our Westerners. So Fafafine is a layered term, but it's more, it tends to associate with someone that was male, born male at birth, identify as trans femme or female. And so that for us is our term, or it could actually have gay males in that term as well. So we don't have a term that's, we don't have various different terms like LGBTIQ. So Fafafine is a term that we have for someone like myself, or best describe someone like myself. Or we also have the term Fatama, which is the equivalent of someone that may have been female at birth, describes himself as lesbian, trans male. So Westerners would probably think there's inadequacies about that, but as a Samoan, we tend to be okay with those terms. Those terms are layered.
Pretty much a third gender, isn't it? It's like a... Yeah.
Third gender. But where it's challenging for us is those that are born in, say, Australia, where they have to come up with the different
have to fit into a box.
Yeah, fit into the box. But for us, it's kind of quite fluid. So, and we're okay with that as Samoans.
Yeah. Amau, let's talk a little bit about you, if we can. What's your story? When did you sort of start to feel a bit different to everybody else, and how did that change your life?
I think for myself, it was just like as a young child, feeling a bit different and then learning to express myself as a shy teenager, but hitting the clubs or the cross at a young age. And then kind of realizing there's more of a layer to myself. So, getting into my 20s and realizing there's a different layer to Amau, and she's going to go this way. And so I think it's been there through knowingly as a young child, but you know, this freedom to be able to express myself later in the years and then evolve as Amau did later on in life. And so seeing the challenges that I've had as a trans woman and a trans woman of colour, has been met with its highs and lows, but have been able to navigate, I guess, my own path, and had really good support from my family, but also from my loved ones, friends as well.
I read actually that you've never actually come out to your family why is that?
The way I best describe it is, from a Samoan cultural term, my culture, we don't have a coming out, you know. So my coming out that I best describe to people is I came out of my mum's stomach. That's my coming out. But the way I see my coming out is just the way it evolved. And that's a, for me, that's a more culturally and affirming way of looking at the way that a Māo has come about, from a Samoan lens, that you evolve and you just blend in just how you are. And so we've never felt the need, like I felt that it's always been, you know, that I had to have a major thing of I'm here. But, you know, my loved ones realize, oh, we love you regardless. So that for me is, you know, just affirming, and I'm okay with that. It's been one of the most beautiful things in terms of finding myself and finding out, you know, who I am, is the fact that I've still got my family and the same friends that I've had since, you know, making this decision to, you know, to be a Māo or to transition to be a Māo.
We've talked a bit about kind of what it was like where you're from and like in your community and that sort of thing, and that's been amazing. Did you come up against like discrimination more when you came to Australia then?
Well, I migrated quite a while ago. I think for me it's, yeah, it more so in the Western, you know, like when I've gone for things such as work, when I've, you know, like accommodation, you know, when I've gone for rental places, and just you know, like the questions that you can consider quite discriminative in terms of, you know, you've actually said that to, you know, someone. But, you know, it's an ongoing thing with it seems to be an ongoing thing with trans people or non-binary people, is that we face a constant day-to-day discrimination. And, you know, laws say they do this and that, but, you know, still a lot of my own trans sisters and brothers still face a lot of discrimination in workplace, not just going for housing, but, you know, things like employment. And those are huge things, and those are things that for me as an advocate, as an activist, are worth fighting for, because, you know, we need for people to see that this is a community that faces a lot of discrimination. And so we need to continue to keep fighting and affirming the rights of trans individuals and non-binary individuals, and, you know, to the table, that we're able to come to and express ourselves freely, be able to access things without the prejudices or the discrimination that a lot of our community face.
That's Pacific LGBTI champion Amau Liotolu, another female changemaker that we are celebrating tonight as a part of International Women's Day on Joy 94.9. Coming up, we head across the ditch to New Zealand to speak with a world champion. This is Worldwide Wave.
Our diverse communities have one home, Joy.
Hi, this is Tara from the Fiji Women's Rights Movement on the Worldwide Wave.
It's Worldwide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one queer story at a time. Special hello to everybody listening on podcast. You can subscribe to receive our podcasts automatically. Either go to joy.org.au/worldwidewave or iTunes or your favourite podcast platform. And don't forget to leave us a review. While we're here this weekend, Chill Out Festival up at Daylesford. There'll be a whole lot of people heading up there for sure. It is the biggest country regional pride festival, event, yes. Regional event.
And the weather's looking really good, apparently.
So, looking fantastic. Yeah. And you know what? Joy will be there as well. We'll be there at Carnival.
Of course.
So if you can't get there yourself, listen in on Sunday to Joy to hear all the antics up at Chill Out. If you can get there, make sure you drop in and say hello. We'd love to hear from you.
Joy, 94.9.
When commentators talk of sporting comebacks, it is rarely about sexuality, but New Zealand Olympian and world champion rower Emma Twigg has done just that. After retiring from international rowing in 2015 and enjoying a somewhat quieter life with her wife, Emma decided in 2019 to not just return to competition, but to specifically support other athletes who may be struggling with their sexuality in sport. She wanted to be positive, or she wanted to be, sorry, a positive role model for change. Here, Emma explains her coming out experience to the rowing community.
So I'm a rower from New Zealand. I have competed in the women's single scull for the last three Olympic Games and hoping for another one next year sometime, fingers crossed. I have been a junior under 23 and senior world champion in the single scull and have been a multiple medalist over the last few years as well, and silver and bronzes here and there. So, yeah, that's pretty much my sporting career in a nutshell.
Now, you came out a few years ago now, Emma.
I've always been out with amongst, I guess, friends and family and within the rowing community. So I came out to my parents and friends and family when I was about 23. So we're talking, I'm 33 now, so it's been quite a while. I guess I haven't been as probably vocal in terms of media and publicity until recently, really. So yeah.
So when you came out, so is it 10 years ago, so you were out in a rowing community, did you perceive that changed anything to the way your career went, or it was just business as usual?
No, to be honest, I've always kind of taken the approach that I wanted to be a really top class rower, and that my sexuality really didn't really have anything to do with that. And so that's kind of been my approach, and I guess has also been my approach in terms of it being a really publicised thing as well, because I wanted people to know me as Emma the rower and the world champion. And then if they were to find out that I was gay, that wouldn't impact what I'd done, and it certainly would create a platform for me and to be a role model and to show others out there that actually, I don't like using the word normal, but that was, I was a regular, every kind of day, high-performing athlete. So, yeah, that's the approach that I've kind of taken throughout my career.
So is rowing a little bit different to other sports, you think, in terms of the way coming out is handled? Or
I think we generally, I've certainly never come across any kind of discrimination. At Rowing New Zealand, everyone is great. I think I'm also very lucky to live in New Zealand where, we've had equal rights for quite a long time now. And I just, again, my approach has been, this is me, this is who I am, and this is normal. So, I don't think it's a hard one. I can speak from my experience. And for me, I've been surrounded by people who are loving and have never really had an issue, but I know that's not the case for everyone. And I know even for me in the early days, it definitely took some time to kind of accept who I was and be confident and comfortable in sharing that with the people around me.
Was the situation in New Zealand when you first started playing, was that different to what it is now for LGBT people?
At the time, there was no one else. I knew of maybe one other gay rower, and I guess that's probably where my reservations came, with the kind of the stigma around those people. And since then, there's another well-known rower who's also last year was the men's single sculler, Robbie Manson, and he was very vocal from the early days in terms of his sexuality and. Kind of being a bit of a pin-up boy. So I think that has definitely helped break down the barriers. But again, I think the more people are exposed to this situation, then the more people just get on with it and kind of look at us and think, well, there's nothing different going on here. People can love who they want to love. And that's kind of the example that I guess Robbie and I have set within our team. And then, again, within our Olympic team as well, I know that, again, we've just been so lucky in terms of the New Zealand Olympic team's stance on inclusion and diversity and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think, again, I feel quite lucky to be in the situation that I'm in, but I know that there's a lot of work to be done in different settings and different sports around the world.
So if you cast yourself back as growing up, and you said that there's two of you openly gay in New Zealand. Do you think you're having this role model, what you want to do now, what effect do you think it would have had on you growing up?
If I had a role model as we have now, I think it would have been huge, to be honest. Yeah, I, as a young rower, I honestly, I felt like I was the only one. And it wasn't until I met others in a position that I was, you know, internationally, that it kind of opened my eyes. And again, I think different sports are different again, because in various sports, it's this kind of, it's more prevalent, I guess you could say. It's a funny topic to talk about. So it's definitely, again, yeah, I hope that, that having role models within our sport allows young rowers to have role models and to, you know, look at us and just feel confident in who they are and be happy in who they are. I guess I probably would have loved to have had that when I was younger, but at the same time, I'm not sure that it would have necessarily changed my process either. I think that's something that everyone deals with very differently, and it's only a journey that you kind of go on, and there's a point in time where it's, you know, even from 23-year-old Emma to 33-year-old Emma, how I've dealt with telling various people and the point that I'm at now is completely different to how I would kind of address who I was with 10 years ago.
Olympian and world champion rower from New Zealand, Emma Twigg, and what an inspiration she is and doing great work in the sporting world. What is it about, like, well, there's two things. New Zealand's always one, what seems to be one ahead of us.
Yes.
On anything to do with LGBTI issues. But there seem to be way more women who are willing to come out in sport than men. Wow. And there's still no AFL player. We've got one soccer player, male soccer player that's come out, Josh Cavallo.
Yes. What's an interesting question, isn't it? Because is it to do with the intimidating culture within male sport, that, you know, the sort of the toxic masculinity that, you know, we've known from Josh's story in the press, in the media. So is it to do with that there are just men are feeling more intimidated to keep quiet about their sexuality, or is it there are just more women because gay men are just, I mean, I certainly don't have positive experiences of a lot of mainstream team sports when I was young, so I definitely had no intention of heading into that, even though I was quite active. Did a range of sports where I always veered towards the individual sports.
But isn't that interesting? Because Emma was really saying about the difference having a visible role model would make is so powerful. And, you know, maybe there's a whole lot of
and I only saw those
gay and trans.
Yeah, I saw those in, like, I did equestrian sports. I saw them in, you know, in dance sport, these sorts of things where, you know, the presence has been much longer and has a longer history of being. So, you know, I definitely think, yeah, you're right. There's a definitely, all we need is a few more Josh Cavallos out there and in various sports, but AFL will be the next. We, you know, we'll wait,
yes.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Geoditch. Hello, this is Rosie Sagan speaking to you all the way from Belfast in Northern Ireland on World Wide Wave.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
A big celebration and pat on the back for our very strong women tonight on International Women's Day. Award-winning author and essayist Lauren Ho, Samoan Whawhawhine trailblazer Amal Liotolu, and New Zealand Olympian and world champion rower Emma Twigg. You can find the full podcasts of those interviews at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or subscribe to Worldwide Wave on your favourite podcast platform.
And everyone who's communicated with us via Facebook, Peter, Liz, Richard, Stephen, Stefan, and a whole heap more have joined us and interacted with us on Facebook this past week. That's W3Joy on Facebook. And
our behind-the-scenes team, yes. Our podcaster Peter and social media master Dean. Catch you next week on Worldwide Wave.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from Worldwide Wave.
the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.